For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
My name is Amy Moreno. I've been involved with Xenos for many, many years now. I've done a lot of different things over the years, including leading and teaching and pastoral counseling. I've done some mission work. Currently, my husband and I are involved in the Nepali community, helping them to really envision and establish a church. So it's been very exciting kind of work. I'm also a clinical counselor, and for the last few years have been the clinical director of Wellspring Counseling. I say all of this because this subject of pain and learning how to live with pain is something that I've thought a lot about over the years, and I kind of come at it from different angles, clinically, spiritually, and also very personally. So pain is kind of a difficult thing. Would you agree? It's kind of hard stuff to know how to live with. And probably all of us have had some form or another of pain in our lives. Whether it might be physical, some kind of our bodies breaking down or some kind of chronic illness that you're dealing with. We can have relational pain in our lives, maybe alienation or, just not getting along well with people, character issues, or maybe it's grief and mourning, loss of a significant person in your life. I think we struggle with spiritual kinds of pain, disappointment in our relationship with God, maybe unanswered prayers, deep theological questions, or maybe it's hurt and wounding from our church communities. There's emotional pain we deal with, whether it's too much anger, too much sadness, being overwhelmed by stress. And I see a lot of clinical kind of pain, depression, anxiety, bipolar, eating disorders, things that aren't easy, and they're things that have to constantly be managed in our lives. I think all of us will encounter and suffer with real pain in our lives. And sometimes it's chronic, sometimes it's unresolvable, and it has this way of needling into our everyday lives. Like I said, I do work with people in pain a lot as a clinical counselor. I see a lot of clinical disorders that affect people's lives very severely. I see pain from relationships. I see pain from our church communities. Lots of different types and sources of pain. And it can be heart-wrenching stuff to watch because it's not easily fixed. It's not cleaned up very well or made to feel better. It can be deep, dark, tragic stuff that doesn't go away. And I've had my own pain to deal with in life. I lost my first husband in an unexpected sledding accident when we were missionaries. My kids were 13 and 6 at the time. And losing him has forever wounded and affected our family very significantly. And I'm not sure that we've ever really recovered from it. And then we added on, and becoming a blended family has its own challenges. And so I share this because pain has been something that I've thought about, I've studied, and I feel like the Lord has given me some insight into and how to manage pain in our lives. You know, some of the pain in my life is by my own making, to be sure, and some of it is not. But all of that is to say, it is something that has been close to my heart and something that I have thought and prayed about a lot. Losing my husband was not the first painful experience in my life, and I found out it wasn't the last one either. And I think that some of us here could probably pull out a laundry list of all the painful things in your life. But I think the real question that I've been wrestling with and that I would really like to touch on in this workshop is, how do you live with it? Is there a way to live with pain that it doesn't suck the life out of you and can affirm the promises of God in His Word to us, but also that it doesn't invalidate the weight and the gravity of the pain that you're in? So is there a way to handle pain that it is not the lens or the magnifying glass that you look at the whole of your life through? And so what I want to consider in this workshop today is, how do we live with our pain both theologically and pragmatically? But one of the first things is that I think we have to have a context for suffering. Because what I found is that understanding suffering from God's perspective is very different than our own perspective of it. And so it was something that I had to think through a lot in my own life, both theologically and personally. And a byproduct of that is this workbook that Lee Campbell and I wrote. And the idea in this workbook is, it's how do you work through suffering in your own life and kind of have a framework, a context for it. Because what I have discovered is that I think the role of suffering gets at things in our lives and other people's lives that maybe can't be gotten to by any other means. And so that's kind of the theme of that workbook. And I don't want to delve into that stuff too much today, although I think that there is some overlap. But more it's to consider the how. How do we think? What do we believe? How do we interact with ourselves and with others when we have deep pain that's not going away in our lives? You know, and there is a lot that I could say, a lot of stuff that we could talk about in this workshop, but I just want to give you guys some of the challenges that I feel like the Lord has really put before me on this subject. So some of the things that I want to consider is our expectations. How do we manage or even change some of the expectations that we have? Or what does it mean to really hope in the Lord in our lives? Is there constructive ways to think about pain? And what about joy? Are pain and joy mutually exclusive? Or is there a way that we can experience joy even in the midst of pain? So in thinking about expectations, we all have them, and we have a lot of them. And one of the things that I've pondered over the years is how much of our expectations come from the culture that we've grown up in. You know, if we lived in another place, would our perspective on pain and suffering be different? Do we have kind of a sense of entitlement in living in America? I was struck by this when we were missionaries living in Eastern Europe. Right after my husband had died, one day our life was fine and normal as it can be for living there. And the next day he was gone. And so the kids and I had to hurriedly make plans to leave, to come back here, to have a memorial service for him. And so the kids and I went to their schools to inform their teachers of what had happened and that we would be leaving the next day, and we didn't know whether we'd be returning or not. And as I started to express this all to my youngest, Kelly, her kindergarten teacher, I started crying. And this lady smacks me, and she says, look at your children. You have to be strong for your children. Quit crying. And I thought, wow, seriously? I like lost my husband yesterday, and this is your response to my pain? But as I was walking away, I thought, you know, their life here is much harder and much more tragic, and I wonder if this is just kind of normal for them. And it occurred to me that maybe I'm a little soft. And then later, as we were frantically trying to pack things up to make our plane the next day, my neighbor, Nina, comes over, and she says, "So I heard about what happened, and that means you guys don't need your TV anymore. So what if you give your TV to me?" And, you know, again, I'm like, seriously? This is their response to tragedy in life. Yeah, that's a little shocking. And so, you know, maybe these guys are not the most sensitive people, but maybe they also understand something that we don't get very easily as Americans. And I like what Ecclesiastes says in 9 verse 3. It says, "It seems so tragic that everyone under the sun suffers the same fate." And then later it says, "People can never predict when hard times might come. Like fish in a net or birds in a trap, people are caught by sudden tragedy." How much are we caught by sudden tragedy in our lives? You know, the encounters that I had the day after our tragedy, they were insensitive and they seemed almost cynical and dismissive of pain. And it's not that I want to affirm that by any means. But on the other side of the spectrum might lie our American culture. Surprise, shock, bewilderment that anything truly bad should happen to me. Or even a sense of entitlement that I don't deserve anything bad in my life. And maybe that's not true for everyone, but I do think it's a danger that we can get in our culture. But one of the other interesting things that I noticed in living in Eastern Europe for a time is that these people definitely had a much harder and painful life than I did, to be sure. But they also had this ability to really enjoy good times. They knew how to celebrate. And we had some excellent times celebrating with them. So it wasn't like they were living with this dark, tragic cloud hanging over them, waiting for the next painful thing to happen. And so maybe there's something there for us to learn. If you've never read about Dietrich Bonhoeffer's life, I suggest you do so sometime. It's pretty challenging stuff. Bonhoeffer was a German Lutheran pastor who strongly opposed the Nazi regime, and he was eventually executed in a German prison. Ajit Fernando, in his book, A Call to Joy and Pain, writes a little bit about his life. And one of his reflections, one of Bonhoeffer's reflections, when he was sitting in prison and awaiting his execution, is he felt like people were making too big of a deal of his suffering. He said about a year before he was executed, writing from the Tegel prison to his friend Eberhard Bethge, who later became his biographer, he said, "There arises a protest in me when I read references and letters to my suffering. To me, this seems like a sacrilege. These things must not be dramatized. It is more than questionable that I am suffering more than you or even more than most people today. Of course, most of what happens here in prison is disgusting, but where is that not the case? Maybe we used to take things too seriously and solemnly in this regard." And later in the same letter, he says, "I must confess that I am sometimes ashamed at how much we have spoken about our own suffering." So this is definitely a different perspective, that maybe we make too much of our pain and suffering. So there's expectations, I think, that we have as Americans, but I think there's also expectations that we have as humans. You know, I think we expect to have a good life. You know, sure, we expect to have some hard things, some rough stuff mingled here and there, but really it's for the purpose of being able to enjoy the good stuff better, right? But I don't know how much of a category we have for ongoing suffering unresolved pain, things that don't get better or things that don't go away. And I think as a Christian, we can live with ourselves as almost a suspicion that when there's pain or tragedy in our lives, that we have done something to deserve it. Am I in some kind of sin? Do they have something that they need to repent about in their lives? Is God disciplining us? We tend to have a transactional view of ourselves, of our own lives. You know, I do this and this should happen. And then when something bad happens, we seek to find the cause. What did I do? How did I make this happen in my life? And I know this was true for me after my husband died. I kind of had this sense of shame and guilt. Like, what did we do wrong? Did we have some kind of sin, some kind of thing that God needed to discipline us for? So in ruminating about all of these things, the light bulb kind of turned on for me when Larry Crabb came to this conference last year in 2016. He met with a number of us counselors over lunch, and a lot of things were talked about at that lunch. But one of the things he gave us helped to clarify some of my thinking and convictions in this area, really much more so. And so I want to share it with you. He calls it his framework for spiritual direction. And I'm not sure that he's written any of this in any of his books. I don't think he's released a new book in regards to this stuff. But there are definitely hints and elements of it in a lot of his material. And one of them for sure, Shattered Dreams. I've encountered a lot of his thinking here. But he says, you know, we all start out in life looking for the good life, the blessed life, the abundant life, and we kind of set up this legalistic framework for our lives. I work hard, and I expect to receive the rewards of my hard work. This is reinforced at school, at work, in our relationships. It's a transactional relationship with God and others. I do, and you give. This type of living really encourages our pride. We're not very good with others when they're in suffering and pain. And we tend to have kind of a fix-it mentality. But somewhere along the line, this breaks down. We encounter suffering, and we end up with deep theological questions, pain, even despair. And so we start to change our outlook from expecting the blessed or the good life to one of, I need healing. I need to experience God fixing this, healing me, showing his incredible power in my situation. The bottom line, I need relief. And so we learn how to pray different kinds of prayers. We read books on how to improve our lives. We go to counseling so we can figure out how to think differently, right? We're looking to how can we manage the pain. But this also has pitfalls. And we find that things don't change easily. Maybe they don't change at all. Things don't improve. And we sink deeper into despair, failure, groaning. And somewhere in all of this, we become empty, broken, out of resources. And I think in this place, we start to thirst for something different. We groan for something more, not just fixing, not just healing, not just experiencing good and pleasure, but we start to really groan for God himself. Just for God to show up, to show me who you truly are. Help me see you more clearly. And we start to care a little less about this life and all the good things in this life for me, and more about grabbing hold of a relationship with God. I remember getting here myself at a point of deep despair when I felt like my whole life was turned upside down, and I really felt like I didn't have any more resources. I didn't have any more hope that things would just work out in my life. My husband was gone, and I had so many problems to manage. And the problems kept coming, and there was not relief. And at first, honestly, I prayed for death. I prayed that God would release me from this life. And then something welled up inside of me. And I realized what I really want is to just know God. To know that, to really know that He's in this with me. And that He's at work in this situation in my life. Not that I need to have a happy life or for things to all get better and fixed or all my problems to be resolved. But what I really wanted was not this intellectual kind of knowing God, but I wanted to experience Him. I wanted that real relationship with Him that I could take to the bank, that I could count on, that I really knew that everything I read in Scripture was true. That's what I wanted more than anything else. And you know, this is the essence of David's song to the Lord in 2 Samuel 22:7. He says, "In my distress I called out to the Lord. I called out to my God. And from His temple He heard my voice. My cry came to His ears. The earth trembled and quaked, and the foundations of the heavens shook." Finish reading this chapter on your own time sometime. It is an amazing picture of God showing up. It was that relationship with God that David was after. And somewhere in this place of hunger, of groaning, of thirsting, God does meet us, and things are set right. It's not that things are all fixed and the pain is gone, or that there's no more suffering, or that we've got it all figured out. But here, God's Spirit meets our spirit, and there's peace, and there's rest, and there's even joy in our lives. And this is the conclusion of David's song in verse 20. He says, "He brought me out into a spacious place. He rescued me because He delighted in me." It was the relationship where David found his rest, his relief. So we shift out of this desperation that things need to be different to a place of more acceptance and joy in our relationship with God. And it seems to follow from there for most of us that we desire to truly be useful to God, to have Him glorified in our lives and through our lives. And we experience a little bit more of what Paul talks about in Philippians 4:7, that the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, that is what's going to guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. So how do we manage our expectations? First, we have to recognize that we have them. And many of the expectations that we have are flawed. And then we got to bring them into the light of Scripture. We got to expose them to what does the Word say. And then there needs to be a willingness to adjust them appropriately. You know, for me, I did have to recognize I had an expectation as a missionary. I thought if I was doing what I thought was God's will, then God should protect me and my family from harm. But God never promised me that. Actually, what He says in Matthew 5, verse 45, is that the rain falls on the righteous and the unrighteous. So He never promised me that harm wouldn't come in my life. But what He does promise is that He will be with me. And that He will be at work in the situation, right? This is Romans 8. Nothing is going to separate you from the love of God. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. There is now, therefore, no condemnation. And actually, I'm at work in all things to bring my glory. So I had to start to change my mindset from I need to have stability and predictability and control in my life to more of one that this life is an adventure. And I'm on a front row seat of watching God's plan unfold in my life, and not only in my life, but in all the lives of the people around me. And that is kind of a cool seat to have. You know, and this is God's goal for our lives, is that we learn how to trust Him more and align ourselves more with what He's doing. Jerry Sitzer, in his book, A Grace Revealed, talks about this. Jerry's books, A Grace Disguised and A Grace Revealed, have been super helpful to me over the years in gaining perspective. Jerry lost his wife, his mother, and his daughter, all in a car accident. And then he was left with three kids to raise on his own. And so he's done a lot of thinking and reflecting about this himself over the years, and he's written some excellent books. And he says in this book, God reclaims and restores us into a living relationship with Himself so that we can become the people God has always intended us to be. So maybe it's not the story that we had imagined for our lives, but God does have a plan. He has an intention for each one of our lives. He goes on to say, the goal of redemption is not immediate happiness as we might define it now, but holiness of life, not the good life as we imagined it on earth, but the perfection of heaven itself. In this case, heaven is not someplace out or up there, perhaps on the other side of Jupiter. It is rather a completion, an enlargement, a perfection of what we experience in this life. Thus, everything that happens in this life spills over into that other and greater life, pointing beyond itself to reality as God knows, sees, and experiences it. So this is weighty stuff to think about. And I think that this kind of a perspective really does challenge us. Where do we put our hope? Where do we put our focus? Is it in this life? Is it in our circumstances? Is it in our relationships? Our dreams, our desires? I mean, we all know the right answer, right? That we need to hope in God. But I don't think that that is what's natural for us. And honestly, I don't think it's the way that we counsel one another. You know, some of the counsel that I've heard over the years when I've been in pain and tragedy in my life, as well, you know, if I'm to be honest, I've given to people over the years, is we say things like, give it time. Time heals all wounds. Really? Just a clock ticking away is going to take away this incredible pain that I have? Or we tell people, you know, they're going to get it someday and they're going to apologize to you when this happens to them. So, what if they don't ever apologize, right? What if they don't ever get it? And really what we're saying is that I want them to experience this kind of pain so they can see how bad they've hurt me. Or we say to one another, well, it's not as bad as such and such or so and so's life, right? So now we're just setting people up to feel really bad and guilty about the pain that they're in. You know, the emphasis on this stuff is that it is other things that give us hope, that promises us hope. Time, somebody else's growth and maturity, comparing our lives to one another. And for sure, God does heal through these things. Time does heal wounds, but why is it that time is healing wounds? Because we're gaining more perspective, and we're seeing more of what God has been doing in and through these circumstances. And sometimes people come back and they do apologize, right? But what's happened? God has been at work in that situation, drawing their attention, giving them sensitivity to things. And yes, other people's pain and tragedy, it does give us perspective. But ultimately, the hope that we have is that God is at work. God is at work in me. God is at work in you. God is at work in the circumstances. Right? So what does it look like to hope in God? It's trusting him that no matter what happens, he's at work. He's doing something in me, in them, in the circumstances, even if I can't see it. This is 2 Cor 4:18. We fix our eyes. We fix our eyes, not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. You know, I remember a client reflecting on this as she was undergoing the painful ordeal of infertility. And she said, I don't know how this is going to work out. I don't know if and when I'll be able to hold my own baby someday. But I do believe that God has a plan in this. I do believe that God is at work in this. And this attitude is so sweet. And I think that this kind of an attitude is what really glorifies God in our lives. And then it's like a tapestry or a painting that someday when I see the finished product, I am going to be pleased. Paul said this at the end of his life in 2 Timothy 4. He says, I fought the good fight. I finished the race, I have kept the faith, and now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing. You know, our lives can take lots of twists and turns, and some of the curves can be really rough. But if you're like me, sometimes you get to a place in your life and you look back and you think, how did I ever get here? And you realize it's not so bad. And I've seen some things, and I've seen what God has been able to do, and it's kind of remarkable. This is God's promise to us in Isaiah 43:2. He says, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they shall not overflow you. When you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned, nor shall the flame scorch you. Max Lucado says in his book, you'll get through this, he says, it won't be painless. God does not guarantee the absence of struggle and the abundance of strength, not in this life, but he does pledge to reweave your pain for a higher purpose. And so some of the pragmatics of hoping in the Lord, think about it. Think about how he has worked in your life. It's good to reflect on this regularly. Maybe journaling, maybe through your prayer record. I think rehearsing this with old friends. When you get together with those people that you only see every 6 months, year, talk about it. What has God been doing in my life? It builds our faith. Read biographies of people. You know, we have an incredible picture as we read the Old Testament and the New Testament of all the ways that God works in people's lives. And we get to see the beginning and the middle and the end of many of those stories. And it is very faith-building. And there's a lot of great biographies out there about missionaries, about great Christian leaders and workers, people who have dedicated their lives to following Christ. And it is very faith-building to see how God works and how he takes care of his people. And one of the practices that has been important to me as I've encountered stuff is being able to reaffirm every morning to the Lord, it is in you I want to put my hope. But I'm not very good at it, so I need a lot of help. And he does. Day after day after day, he shows up and he helps me learn how to keep hoping in him. So perspective on pain, you know, there's a lot of stuff we could say here, but I just want to share a couple principles that have helped me a lot. One is that it is our response to circumstances that brings the fruit in our lives. And secondly, that there is a bigger story to your life. You know, our response to circumstances, I think that there is such a strong temptation for us to demonize our circumstances or the things that cause us pain, whether it's an ex-spouse or whether it's a bully at school or whether it's a car manufacturer that makes bad airbags or governmental policies or death or whatever it is. And it's not to say that these things are not bad sometimes. Absolutely, they are. But it can be tempting to go after what we think is the source of our pain and demand that things change. This can have good results sometimes. Car manufacturers have to redesign their airbags. The bully at school is confronted. Governmental policies do change. We see a lot of that. And sometimes we have good results. But it also, there is a temptation, there is a tendency to live a life as a victim, to blame things or other people for your life, as though I have no power or control over my mood, over my feelings, over my choices, over my responses. And you know, what I've seen is that changing the source of your pain will not answer it all. It will not bring the relief or the fruit in your life. It will be in your response to the circumstances that bring the relief or the fruit. I was so struck by this as a client of mine was sharing some pretty incredible insight and perspective about this a while back. Her dad had died unexpectedly of a massive heart attack. And at the same time, she experienced a miscarriage, and there was a lot of other really painful things going on at one time in her life. And so she came into counseling saying, I need a reset button. How do I get out of this terrible pain? How do I address the circumstances of my life to get some relief from this pain? Will I ever be happy again? And at one of her last sessions, she shared, you know, what I've learned is that pain is actually the last gift that my father gave me. That through his death, I had to dig deeper and find a more substantial relationship with Christ. And as a result of that, I think my kids are going to grow up with an entirely different mother. One that has a vital relationship with Christ. She said, I think that that's going to be really significant for them. And I had to agree. I think that's going to be really significant. She said, I was so afraid of carrying the pain, of feeling the pain, that I realized that it was not as consuming as I thought it would be. Because I met God in it. I met his grace. And I experienced that his love, his ability to sustain me, was so much more powerful than the pain. Sitzer says, we don't need the right circumstances to mature us as Christians or to find happiness in life. For better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health, God remains faithful and true. He uses whatever is at hand to make us more like Christ. And so what my client learned was that it was her response to her circumstances, her changing her lens, her changing her view of the circumstances, that is what led her down a different path and led her to find some real relief and a real ability to manage the pain in her life. And it seems like this is the place where people have victory, is when they stop looking at their life as, look at all of these bad things that keep happening to me, and more to, what is God doing in my life in the midst of this? And secondly, is to realize that there is often a bigger story to your life. This is really powerful stuff. You know, think about the remarkable thing that Joseph said to his brothers in Genesis 50. Here, his brothers had dumped him in a cistern because he was kind of annoying and full of himself, right? And they left him for dead, and they walked away from him. And many years later, they're reunited to their brother. And this is what Joseph says: what you meant for evil, God has turned to good. Max Licato, in his book, God Will Use Us for Good, says, as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. In God's hands, intended evil becomes eventual good. That's the message of Genesis 50 and the heart of Joseph's story. This is such a radical perspective. You know, how do we get here? How do we look past the pain and the difficult circumstances and believe that God is doing something greater, bigger, in and through them? But isn't this what we encounter over and over as we read Scripture? Like Sitzer says, he says, think about Hebrews 11. The characters that we read about did not have the vantage point that we have now because they were inside the story. There is so much they did not know, so much they could not see. Still, they chose to believe that their lives were caught up in a bigger story. They chose to trust God and follow Him into an unknown future, however slim the evidence of a bigger story that could make sense out of their little ones. And he says, think about Ruth. You know, there is no way that Ruth could have known what would happen in the decades and the centuries that followed her short time on earth. She was simply blind to it, her vision confined by her immediate circumstances, which is true for all of us. We are bound by time. We are blinded by our immediate circumstances too, just as she was, which makes it exceedingly difficult for us to see and believe how each of our stories fit into a big story. It's hard to see much of anything when we're consumed by pain, anguish, and doubt. It's hard to see from day to day, largely because our own story seems so trivial, so meaningless, or random. We race through life, enduring tragedy, laboring on the job or at home, doing routine tasks, often so distracted by pressures and responsibilities that we lack the time, the energy, or even the interest to think much about the possible significance of our life story. For now, in the painful silence, it's enough to know that there is a story out there that can make sense out of my own. But it's not merely a story, it is the story. He says, knowing the biblical story, that it's not going to solve every problem or answer every question, but it will provide perspective, a foundation for faith and a vision of hope. It will help you to believe that the story of your life does not consist of a series of random, disconnected events that have no meaning or purpose. A bigger story of redemption is unfolding, and it will help you to make sense out of your own. Ruth, a foreign Moabite who was grafted into the family that produced the Savior of the world. If only she knew. That might very well be said of us someday, too. If only they knew. Max Licato says, you know, he redeemed the story of Joseph. Can't he redeem your story as well? It won't be quick. Joseph was 17 years old when his brothers abandoned him. He was at least 37 when he saw them again. Sometimes God takes his time. 120 years to prepare Noah for the flood, 80 years to prepare Moses for work. He called young David to be king, but returned him to the sheep pasture. He called Paul to be an apostle, and then he isolated him for 3 years. Jesus was on earth 3 decades before he started his ministry. So how long will God take with you? He may take his time. His history is redeemed not in minutes, but in lifetimes. So some pragmatic ways to gain perspective. Think about the significance of your life. Remind yourself that God does have a plan. God is at work. He's accomplishing things. And he also has works for you to do in this life. That's Ephesians 2:10. And consider that we often can't choose our circumstances, but our responses to our circumstances, these matter a lot. And so think carefully. Consider how to respond to the circumstances in your life, because you may change the course of history by your response. And don't be afraid to feel the pain, like my client learned. It won't kill you. Actually, it can be an opportunity to really build a deeper, more foundational and stable relationship with the Lord. So how do we live with pain? How do we live with it and not be undone by it? Perspective is important. You know, it does, having perspective does help us calm down when we realize that all of this pain is not for naught. It's not the end of the story. God is at work and I can hang on. I think honesty is also really important. Being honest with ourselves, being honest with others, because pain is hard. And we need the support of our fellow brothers and sisters in Christ to help handle some of the pain that we're in. You know, this is 2 Corinthians 1. Paul says, the comfort that you have received, you need to turn around and give that to other people, because we desperately need it. We need it from each other. But you know, people are going to have a hard time knowing what's going on in your life if you don't talk about it with them. So we do have to be willing to be vulnerable and transparent and let people in on the hard stuff of our lives. What can be helpful to others when they're in pain is just a willingness to listen to them. Let them tell you about how hard it is, all the stuff that's going on that creates so much pain and difficulty for them. We often need people to just a willingness to listen and spend time with us. And then encouragement is super important, right? Because carrying pain, managing pain, living with pain is a lot. And we need a lot of encouragement in the middle of it. And don't be given that pithy kind of statements to help someone in their pain. Make it real. Point out the things, the good things that they're doing in their life, even in the midst of pain. It is amazing that you are able to keep taking care of your children when you've got all of this stuff going on. Or that you keep showing up to taking care of your elderly parents, even when they're not grateful and they give you a hard time. Or that you continue to go to work day after day, or show up to Bible study week after week, even when you've got all of this stuff going on. People are doing good things in the middle of their pain, and they need to know that it matters that they keep doing it. And then finally, remember, you don't have to fix them. It's not your job to solve all their problems, fix all their pain, make it go away. God did not place you on this earth to fix everybody's problems, right? What your role is to come alongside them, to be supportive, encouraging, a good listening ear, help provide perspective, pray for them, That's your job. God's job is to heal, to fix, to draw them. Taking care of ourselves in the midst of pain is super important because often this is the place that we develop really unhealthy behaviors and dangerous kinds of thought patterns. We can get into some really negative thinking when we're in the middle of pain. Some of the things that I have heard, some of the things that I have thought in the midst of my pain are things like, I can't take this anymore. You know, why is it that all of these horrible, bad things keep happening to me? I wish it was over. I hate this life. You know, and it's not the occasional self-pitying thought that is the problem, but it's when these thoughts really take root in our thinking and we start to draw conclusions out of them that it becomes a really dangerous place. And so I think that we need to be willing to switch our thinking, to change our lens from all of this horrible stuff keeps happening to me, to how has God made me adequate to be able to handle it? Because He has. He's provided all kinds of stuff for you to be able to handle the pain that you're in. He's provided you with a job, with relationships, with a supportive community, with friends, with family, with money to take a vacation and have a break, with books to read. There's all kinds of ways that God is at work and God has provided for you, and tons of ways that He's taking care of you in the midst of pain. Pain is exhausting. It's overwhelming. It has the ability to kind of take us out. And so we need the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual energy to be able to stay in the game. And this is only going to happen if we develop healthy habits. Sleep is important. Prioritizing being able to get good sleep is really important when you've got hard stuff going on in your life. Having times to relax, having times to take breaks from the pain is really important. Exercise, I've heard, can be helpful. Setting yourself up to have enjoyable activities is really good. You know, sometimes when we're in a lot of pain, we don't think that it would make sense that we should go out and have a good time with friends, you know? Yet, this is a lot of the ways that God provides for us, is giving us breaks, giving us some distractions, so that we're not living under it 24/7. Some of the things that I have learned when it comes to experiencing joy in the midst of pain, because believe it or not, pain and joy are not mutually exclusive. You can have joy in the midst of pain, but there are some things that we need to kind of do in order to experience some joy. One is that I realize that I am a much happier and more joyful person when I don't compare my life to others. When I can accept my life for what it is, and I can focus more on the opportunities that God has given me. With that, I find that I have a lot more joy when I put on my gratitude lens in life, when I'm actively thanking God, not only for the big things in my life, but also for the little things. You know, I got a pillow to put my head on every night. I have a roof over my head. I have a refrigerator full of food. Probably most of it is rotting at this point, but I still have food. There are so many things that I can be thankful for. And it helps my mindset. It helps my heart when I choose to thank God for all of these things. I think another important thing is being able to enjoy things that are enjoyable. There's a lot of enjoyable things we've got going on in our lives. Give yourself permission to enjoy them. There are some great people that you interact with. People have some incredible stories that are really fun and enjoyable to hear about. There's incredible sensations that we get in this life. You are useful to other people. You have an impact on other people's lives, you showing up makes a difference. These are all things to really enjoy. And this is a lot of what God does in our lives, as he gives us things to take care of us in the midst of it. And finally, the other thing that I've learned that's been super important to me is that I have to pull my thinking into the present. When I allow myself to ruminate about all of these past things that have happened, it just brings death and ick and more pain. It's pain upon pain. Or when I start to focus on the future and think about how is all of this stuff going to work out, then I get riddled with anxiety and things that are not helpful to me. And so when I can pull my thinking into what is today filled with, how is it that God is working in this day? It helps tremendously. So I'll just leave you with this quote from Sitzer. He says, "We can be confident that God is in this now. He's working his redemption. We are free, therefore, to concentrate our energies on what is immediately at hand, whether sick or healthy, on top of the world or in the depths of pain, surrounded by friends or suffering from loneliness. We can be present and attentive to what God is trying to do in our lives, even when it's unclear, painful, or both." So just in conclusion, you know, pain is a difficult thing to live with, but it makes a big difference when you can shift your lens from all of these painful things in my life to what is God doing in the midst of it, and being able to trust him that he's doing a work and he's committed to doing that work. It relieves our pain a lot. I think it's important coming alongside people carefully and gently and trying to draw their perspective gently to other things that are going on. You know, that it is going to be in their responses to the things that are going on that's going to provide some of the victory, some of the relief and fruit. But we have a hard time seeing that when we're in the middle of it. You know, so we want to be gentle in how we come alongside people and kind of confront that perspective. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it is super important, you know, over the last couple of days we've been talking a lot about having that kind of time where you're regularly reading the Word and you're praying about the Word to the Lord. And I think that that's the kind of thing that gives us perspective over and over. We're not going to resolve our pain or get perspective inside of ourselves, inside of our own head. It's only going to come from, you know, the Word and other people sharing the Word with us that's going to help draw ourselves to more perspective and make us hunger for deeper things like the presence of God. So I think I know for me in really dark, deep times, I have regular times that I get into the Word, but I really had to extend that longer and read some things like Job and Isaiah and Lamentations and other books that really can feed my soul in the midst of hard stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I think telling people that you're praying for them is really important, because it draws their attention to maybe there is something more, something different in the midst of my life. And so I think it opens up a lot of doors, because when we're in pain, we're looking for some kind of relief, some kind of solution. And so if they know that you're actively praying for them and you're asking them about it, they may share with you some of the stuff that God is drawing their attention to. So I think it's an excellent way to come alongside people.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.